The Pat Kenny Show
with Mater Private Network
on News Talk.
Good morning. This is Jonathan Healy filling in for Pat Kenny this week. Boris Johnson, more of that interview I was telling you about a little bit earlier, where he, you know, said the great way to reduce the obesity problem in Britain is for people to eat less, and might save them a few bob as well, because, you know, the cost of living is so much. It's fascinating insight into how that man's mind works. But on the more controversial issue of the Northern Ireland Protocol, he's been defending the decision to introduce legislation to amend it, saying it creates unnecessary barriers on trade and fixing it is, quote, not a big deal. He is in a minority on that, at least internationally, and Simon Coveney's comments on it have been quite strong. And what is clear is that they have moved a considerable distance away from what was once considered a limited and specific breach of international law. They're now going all out to say, yes, officer, I was speeding, and you might think that's breaking the law, but I don't, so I'm just going to carry on. Thanks very much indeed. It's a remarkable way for any sovereign government that wants to be credible on the world stage to behave. Yet here we are, George Parker, and the Financial Times this morning, of which you are political editor, has details of it. Section 15 seems to be the thing we're going to hear a lot about.
Yes, an incredibly sweeping section of the bill. So the government likes to give the impression this is all very targeted and they just want to take out bits of the protocol they don't think are working very well. When I say just, those are four quite big areas which we can talk about maybe in a minute. But then there's also in the bill a clause which basically says that, which give ministers powers to rip up almost the entire protocol, barring, I think, three limited exceptions involving north-south cooperation and the common travel area, things like that. Which the government says, well, it's just an insurance policy in case we need to do any tidying up. But I think lawyers will be worried that this gives a much more sweeping power and goes even further than some people feared it would.
Yeah, but you don't legislate for ifs and buts. You legislate for certainty. And what they're talking about here is fixing the protocol. They can do it on any of the pretexts to end the Irish sea border checks, to end the state aid provisions, to harmonise VAT rates, to lessen, eliminate or avoid the difference in tax duties between Great Britain and Northern Ireland. And most importantly, this is a wonderful phrase to put into legislation, safeguarding economic stability. I mean, that's very much open to the interpretation of whoever wants to.
Well, it can mean almost anything, can't it? Look, I mean, this is going to end up in the courts for sure. You know, Boris Johnson says it's not a big deal, but government lawyers or former government lawyers are sort of shocked, really, by the scale of the bill and what's being demanded. And they regard it, and many Conservative MPs and Boris Johnson's own party regard this as a blatant breach of international law, which goes against everything that both the United Kingdom and indeed the Conservative Party were meant to stand for, which is about upholding institutions, upholding international agreements and being an upstanding member of the international community. It's a huge, huge step for Boris Johnson to be taking. I think a lot of people will be wondering this morning exactly why he's taking this on when he's got plenty of other problems on his plate.
Yeah, I mean, it is short-termism though, isn't it? This is just to try and get him over the hump, to look big to the ERG and other people who might somehow manage to think that Boris is still the man to lead the party. But ultimately, it's going to be months before this legislation passes through, if it ever passes at all. So this is short-termism at its finest.
Well, there's a lot of short-termism going on at the moment. Boris Johnson's almost living from sort of day to day and week to week politically, throwing out initiatives left, right and centre. But you're right that he is dependent on the support of this core of Eurosceptic Conservative MPs, the European Research Group, the ERG you just mentioned. Their membership, the numbers of people in the ERG is a bit unclear. They never actually say that. But when I was speaking to one of the senior figures in the ERG last week and said, how many members do you have now? He just said, enough. And that's quite ominous for Boris Johnson. It basically means they've got him where they want him. And, you know, Boris Johnson will also say this is intended, of course, to, you know, to lessen tensions in the unionist community towards the protocol and ultimately persuade the DUP to go back into the executive at Stormont. And there was a bit of a sort of moment of dawning realisation, this may not be quite that simple, at a cabinet meeting last week, where it was where Brandon Lewis, the Northern Ireland Secretary, admitted they didn't have any assurances from the DUP that they'd start the process of going back into the executive when this bill's published today.
And in fact, they wanted to be passed. They've made it very clear has to be through by the time they do this. So what Boris Johnson is doing, and Liz Truss, who, let's face it, wants Boris's job, what they're doing now is alienating Europe, potentially sparking a trade war of some kind, going expressly against what the US Congress has told them not to do and the Biden administration is not to do. So that's Europe, America, the Republic of Ireland, their next door neighbour. They're not friends with Russia for obvious reasons. China, they're trying not to be friends with either. I mean, like, who in their right mind would want to enter a period of splendid isolation like this when you're trying to grow your economy internationally?
It's a baffling one to many Conservative MPs, has to be said. And the other thing is that there's a sort of a lingering perception, a sort of hangover from the Brexit years and the last general election, that Boris Johnson can throw Brexit out as sort of red meat to Tory supporters and it's a vote winner in some way. His own strategists say that moment has long passed. The voters in the 2019 general election voted for Boris Johnson because they wanted to get Brexit done. They were told there was an oven-ready deal, famously, and they thought that was going to be the last they ever heard of the B word, and they thank God for that. The fact that this is now going to become an open-ended sort of running sore in Parliament, an open war in his own party about this, as you say, tensions with all our international partners, the prospects of damaging trade at a time when the British economy could be sliding into a recession later this year, will be baffling, I think, to many voters. And it's certainly not a sort of, apart from with certain members of his own party, the ERG we were discussing, it's hard to see what the political upside for it is.
Honest answer, though, please, George. Do the British public care about this? Or is this just seen as, oh, Boris is at it again?
Well, look, I mean, the brutal truth is that the British public generally don't care very much about Northern Ireland. They don't know about the politics in Northern Ireland, and they don't really care very much. I think that's the first thing. They definitely don't want to hear about Brexit anymore. But I think why it is damaging for Boris Johnson is, as I was saying, it gives the impression to the public that he's still fighting old wars. He's obsessed with something they don't really care about, and he's not focusing on the core part of the day job, which is trying to help them through a cost of living crisis. So I think those are particular problems for Boris Johnson. There's another problem, actually, which I should just mention, which is that he's losing support, particularly at the moment, among soft Conservative voters in the south of England, sort of the people who used to be regarded as traditional Tory voters, people who respect institutions, want to see high standards of government, don't think that Britain should be an international lawbreaker. And those are the kind of people who are drifting away from the Conservative Party and the Conservative Party's southern heartland. So it is a multiple layered problem for Boris Johnson, and I'm really fascinated to see how it all plays out today.
And it will play out, and that's the one thing that is certain, that it is going to play out. But there are other things that are pressing on the minds of people in Britain. That comment this morning that I mentioned, Sky News are tweeting it this morning: what we don't want to do is whack new taxes that will push up the price of food, says the PM, adding, of course we need to champion healthy eating, and the best way to lose weight is to eat less. I mean, it's obviously true and sensible, but again, this is a man devoid of ideas, devoid of any meaningful contribution to the narrative. He's telling people who can't afford food to eat less because they'll lose weight.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a danger whenever politicians at Westminster start telling people how to live their lives, whether putting on a jumper to stay warm or eat less to cut weight. I mean, it never looks good. I mean, the problem with Boris Johnson is he does adopt causes, and then when the going gets tough, he abandons them. So you recall he almost died of COVID back in 2020. He came back sort of for the zeal of the convert, saying he was going to launch a war on obesity, and had this very sort of bold plan to cut the amount of sugar and salt in people's diets. Well, now, of course, he sees that as nanny statism and totally inappropriate for the spirit of the times. He promised to come in to build loads of houses in the country, and as soon as there was any opposition to that from Tory MPs, he abandoned that. The environment now is being thrown on the back burner, because, again, the cost of living crisis is more important in his view. So he's just approved a new gas field just outside London. It's it's very hard to know where you are with Boris Johnson from one day to the next. And, whether he's thought through this Northern Ireland policy and what its long-term implications are, I suspect probably the answer is no.
Finally, George, if we can, what's the timeline on this? Obviously, the legislation is being published today. It'll be brought before the House. It'll be debated. Then it has to go to the Lords. We're going to see some Tories vote against it in the House of Commons. Most likely the Lords won't back it because the slightly more elder lemons are up there. What is the timeline, and when will we likely see this being debated, at least domestically in the UK?
Well, the first stage in the House of Commons could come as early as next week, I think, possibly even this week, and the second reading, which would be where MPs will have the chance to have their say, and a number of Tory MPs will vote against it. It will probably go through the House of Commons, then into the House of Lords, and that's where it will run into a massive blockade. The House of Lords takes its responsibilities on constitutional issues and law-breaking issues very seriously. So the House of Lords could block this bill. It's an unelected House. The House of Commons can then pass something called the Parliament Act to override the House of Lords, but that can take a year to push through. So we could be talking about this being an issue, a live political issue in the UK, right through to almost the eve of the next general election, which is scheduled for 2024. So it's going to be a long, drawn-out saga, I'm afraid.
George Parker, political editor of the Financial Times, thank you for that. That uncertainty is not what exporters want to hear. It's not what businesses looking to trade with Britain want to hear. It's less of a deal than it used to be, but is still a big market. Tim Cullinan is the president of the Irish Farmers Association. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning, Jonathan.
We could be living with this hanging over us for the bones of 12 months, George Parker says. What will that mean for your members?
That's right. Just listen to George there, and that's very concerning for me. If it's going to go to the House of Commons and then it has to go to the House of Lords, and we still don't know what decision we're going to have. And look, for me, I think I would have a very clear position on this. You know, there was a protocol agreed. Everybody signed up to this back in December 2020. And now, you know, we have a government and an individual wanting to change this deal again and come forward with new legislation. And suppose we look at it, I think what's very important here is that trade flows can continue to flow, you know, from Ireland here into the UK and onto the rest of the EU as well. And if we look at it, even post-Brexit, in excess of 33% of our agricultural exports go into that UK market. So obviously that's very concerning for us. And on the other side then, since this trade deal was done, Boris Johnson has been negotiating trade deals with Australia and New Zealand, you know, which obviously is going to put our markets under pressure again. And furthermore, you know, farmers and the entire country have been dealing with massive inflation over the last number of months now, in particular with fuel, fertilizer and feed. And anything that will restrict product coming or goods coming into this country will inflate those issues again. And I suppose the other point I want to make is, you know, the world is a completely different place today. We are dealing with a war in the Ukraine as well, and we all know there's no point going back into it this morning, but the impact that's having in particular with fertilizer and fuel and the feed again that cannot be got out of that country at the moment. So there's a lot of serious issues on the table at the moment. And I suppose the final point is, you know, the trade between ourselves here in the Republic and Northern Ireland, which has been flowing quite well even since that trade deal or the protocol was agreed. And the last thing I think anybody wants here on this island is seeing a situation where we would go back to a hard border again. The reason the protocol was put in place was there would be checks on goods coming across the Irish Sea, and it would avoid any such thing as a border there. And, you know, we have substantial trade with ourselves and our partners in Northern Ireland, and has improved since Brexit. And if you look at just one or two examples, there is approximately 40% of the milk produced in Northern Ireland is processed here in the south. And, you know, we have trade for live animals going from the south up to Northern Ireland as well. So it's important that all of that can continue. You know, for both sides of the island, I think, Jonathan, that's very, very important.
What are the things that your colleagues across the water in the UK are concerned about? Is the likelihood of Australian, New Zealand lamb coming in, other products coming into that country that will undercut what they're producing there, based on what Boris Johnson and Liz Truss have introduced, there's no reason to suggest that they wouldn't then come into Northern Ireland as well if the protocol was abandoned. And how concerned would you be that that will result then perhaps in some of the price pressures coming on your members in the south to try and match that, and perhaps some of that product leaking over the border?
Jonathan, you're absolutely right, and the reason that it was in the protocol agreement that there would be proper checks on goods coming into the country was to avoid a situation like that. You're right, from the get-go, and I would be in constant talks with our counterparts, the NFU in the UK and the UFU in Northern Ireland as well. And they have been very concerned with the advent of trade deals since Brexit. And so that is a huge concern for them. And if we look at it, you know, we here in Ireland, we are part of the single EU market. I think it's very, very important to know that there is a flow of goods within that single market. And now we have one country that has decided to leave that single market and instigate trade deals, you're right, with Australia and New Zealand. And there's nothing to say that Boris Johnson wouldn't instigate a trade deal with South America and allow more cheap beef into UK, which absolutely may leak into mainland Europe as well, which would create serious problems for our markets.
There's a lot of pressure, Tim, on the system at the moment. Your members will tell you about it all day, every day. The consumer is feeling the pinch here right now. The cost of meat has skyrocketed in recent weeks. Everybody goes to the supermarket knows that. Where are those price pressures coming from that we see very expensive chicken, very expensive pork on our shelves at the moment?
Yeah, I suppose where the price pressures are coming from is the inflation, you know, that farmers have been dealing with for almost a year now. You know, we've seen massive inflation in the cost of fertilizer, you know, which fertilizer is the one that will drive food production. Fuel, obviously, that everybody is aware of, you know, which is needed for processing and planting crops or whatever. And then we have the actual feed as well. We've seen price increases or food inflation in the region of 130% in the actual feed for feeding animals. So from our point of view, that's where it's coming from. But you know, I was just looking at Kantar, the most recent Kantar figures over the weekend, and the inflation at retail level in some products has overall has increased by about 7%. And in other areas, there has been no increase at all. So I think what we need to see here now, we need equity in the food supply chain, you know, whether it's retailers, the processing sector, and each sector within that chain has to take somewhat of a hit here. It's important we protect the consumer, but also the primary producer has to be protected here as well.
But how much are we going to see the price of those basic products going up in the months ahead? I mean, this is a one-way train, isn't it?
It is. Well, if we have seen at producer, primary producer level or farmer level, we've seen inflation in the region 50 to 60%. Well, you know, that is definitely going to see the price of food going up, Jonathan. You know, there's no point saying anything else, because if we want farmers to continue producing, and you know, we have a country like the Ukraine now, which has been described in the past as one of the breadbasket countries of the world, out of production at the moment. So I think there's a responsibility on all of the rest of us in other member states that we can produce food as efficiently as possible to make up for that loss of production in the market for this current period.
Tim Cullinan, President of the IFA. Thanks very much for that. Before that, George Parker, Political Editor with the Financial Times.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Matter Private Network.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.